We'll do a little review. Thank you again, Patty, for that.
Oh.
I look forward to reading that. Let's start with a couple of things. Nothing that critical. Today we'll get into stuff which is much richer, I think. Last time we talked a lot about his doubts. It's not too hard to imagine. And how when you take a step toward living a meaningful life, the experience is often meaninglessness because you've left the old security and yet you haven't arrived at the meaningful situation. A lot about the desert, the period of emptiness that one goes through when the old has been let go of, and the emptiness that it takes to hear the new. And I think that's a very brief summary of what we did. Well, I'm also supposed to say the date. Today is April 1st.
Thank you.
April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
I should have played a trick.
Too late.
Descent into Hell is then what we looked at briefly. I said I'd repeat the text because I think it's so important. And here's the first letter. I don't know that there's much to it. There's the picture of going down. I see a great rock face. Here I am, 237. Shall we kill the lights just for a minute so you familiarize yourself with it.
Can we name the image? What is that?
Image 3V1. He sinks into great depths, sees a luminous red stone. I see that over there on the right. Then he takes the stone, which is covering an opening, and descends. And then he hears the flow of underground water, and he sees this. He sees a wounded head of a man and a black scarab and a dark stream. And on the right, he sees a thousand serpents crowd around a sun. That's on the right.
I was thinking about that sun and how when an egg is fertilized,
yeah,
it reminded me of that, as if there was a fertilization trying to take place by the snake.
Mm-hmm. Well, and link up the red stone and the red sun. Mm-hmm. So it goes down, and he sees the red stone, and then he sees the red sun, and one always does violence with these simple interpretations, but there's so much material here, I think, just to give us some orientation, I would say that's Jungian psychology, that red sun. Why do I say that? Well, it's actually the luminosity of the unconscious. How are those two things saying the same thing in different words? Jungian psychology is Jung's distillation of the voice of the images he heard during this period. And see, they emerged. He didn't think this out. He was assaulted by experiences. He recorded those experiences and then interpreted those experiences as best he could within the framework of the experience itself, and that's Jungian psychology. Another way to talk about that sun is it's the fruit of symbolic thinking. It's not linear. That's why it's in the underground. It's the artistic process. communicates a message. Put it any way you want. But we'll talk about that hero today. That's going to be what he had to slay. That would be the old way of doing things. The scarab, are you familiar with the symbolism of the scarab in Egypt? Everyone knows that. They roll their eggs up in the dung of cows, I think. I forget exactly what. Is it cows? So, of course, the Egyptians didn't know about eggs and things like that. So they thought that the beetle rebirthed itself through dung. So it's an image of transformation through the lowest, through the most disgusting. But where that hero with the gash in his head is scary. The beetle would be the sign of hope that something is going to follow that gash in the head. And what follows it is that sun, that other way of understanding.
So you read it from left to right.
I think here you can. You can't always. But here I think it would make sense to do that.
And that the sun at the end looks like where the energy comes from. Where your energy is fighting.
Yeah. And the fertility idea that Kathy mentioned, I think, fits too. This is the image of why he's doing all this. It's the insights that are going to come to him by doing all this. Fertile, but coming out of the darkness.
Does this have any connection to Siegfried?
Well, that's Siegfried on the left.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, or his buddy, one or the other. Yeah. So I think that's what we did last time. But it's so important now because we're really getting into the meat of the vision. So it takes 2:38. We'll see more of Siegfried, but I'm anticipating by a couple of pages, he'll talk about killing a hero pretty soon. Well, that's the hero. He's another version of the hero he kills. And we'll say a lot more about the hero. But, Kathy, why don't you give us your little results on Siegfried?
I just did a very basic summary. Oh, thank you. Interestingly enough, Siegfried is also taken into a cave after his birth in the original stories. So you can see at the top there, I just gave you a basic family tree of from the ring cycle. And you can see that Siegfried is the son of Wotan and a mortal woman. Sigmund and Sieglinde, mm-hmm. or Siegfried's parents, are Wotan's mm-hmm. children.
Right.
So Wotan is Siegfried's grandfather.
Right.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
And he is born an orphan because his father has previously died and his mother dies in childbirth. And he's raised by a dwarf who is a metalsmith. So in the original, Eda, is that how you say that?
I think
Eda?
So, yeah.
Siegfried was actually a noble prince called Sigurd, and he was a very proud man, kind of a haughty spirit, who was known for his physical power, willfulness, and lack of fear. And as we know, mythological heroes births are always surrounded in mystery, and so Siegfried was born from an incestuous union between Sigmund and Sieglinde, who are Votan's children by a mortal woman. So you can see kind of even the Christ story there, the god, you know, mates with the mortal woman and produces this hero. So, and as I said, he was born an orphan and raised by this dwarf, Memmer, who actually, after the birth, takes him into a cave for a while. He really is part divine and part human, as so many mythological heroes are. Votan, early on, prophesies that a hero will forge a mighty sword and slay a dragon, and of course Wagner picks this up and plays that out in the third opera of the Ring cycle, Siegfried. And this is a quote from Memory Streams Reflection. Siegfried, I thought, is what the Germans want to achieve, heroically to impose their will, have their own way. Where there is a will, there is a way. I had wanted to do the same thing, but now that was no longer possible. The dream showed that attitude embodied by Siegfried, the hero, no longer suited me, therefore it had to be killed. After the deed, I felt an overwhelming compassion, as though I myself had been shot, a sign of my secret identity with Siegfried, as well as the grief a man feels when he is forced to sacrifice his ideal and his conscious attitude. This identity and my heroic idealism had to be abandoned, for there are higher things than the ego's will, and to these one must bow. And if you really want to read more about Siegfried as a symbol of a hero, symbols of transformation, there are quite a few pages there, and I didn't want to summarize all of that and bring it in and take up our time, but read that on your own.
Thanks. That's really, I mean, I think some of the things you mentioned are key here. Proud, haughty, power, and maybe above all, willfulness. As far as Jung's concerned, that's an image of the values that have led Western civilization, I'd say, since the Enlightenment. We see a problem, we make a plan, we execute it. And we take great pride in doing so. Never asking, is it in harmony with the human being? Or is it in harmony with the historical situation? Are we producing a lifestyle that is in harmony with who we are? Siegfried doesn't care about any of that stuff. He just wants to accomplish. And, you know, if you've read Jung's early life and you see those early pictures of Jung, you can see he had the same attitude. Pushy. And so on. Figure things out rationally. Where that son would be figuring things out emotionally.
It's really not in the ring cycle until Siegfried rescues Brunhilde, who is Wotan's daughter. He really doesn't know fear. He never feels fear. But when he meets her, for some reason, with the feminine, produces a fear in him. Maybe he's met with his humanity at that time.
Well, this would be Siegfried before that.
Yeah.
You and just etymologically, I think I may have mentioned, Sig means victory. Fried means peace. Victory, a peace through victory, which of course is a joke. When the Nazis would say Sieg Heil, it's the same Sieg. Holy victory. That's what that means. Sieg Heil. You can think of Siegfried as the spirit of Nazism. That brutal push to accomplish an ideal, irregardless of who gets trampled. So that's what Jung's seeing is killed. And since that is how he lived, that's why he says it felt like me. And so this is really the beginning of the process, the loss of the old. And now what comes from now on is going to be replacing what has been lost. If we don't live by the will, how do we live? If we don't push our way through, how do we accomplish things? If we're not arrogant, how do we protect ourselves in a hostile environment, and so on? But I think this is really the first critical image in the material. So, 238, he just says things like that first column, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. I am still a victim of my thinking. That thinking would be Siegfried. Oh, now you can see? So do I, but in a different kind of darkness. I'm stunned, but I want to be stunned. Now, he said something in the middle of that second paragraph, which we can think about for a second. Keep it far from me, science, that clever knower. He, as I say, most of the time I'm not going to look at the footnotes, but every now and then they do refer us. In the corrected draft, science is deleted. One of the things that's going to come out of this is how do we understand science? Because science is basically the system that Siegfried symbolizes. And here we'll see he's very doubtful of the value of science. But throughout his life, I think he tried to come to terms with science. How can science be a tool and not a Siegfried? So science, we have to kind of always figure, okay, what's he mean by that? Here I think he means the narrow, objective pursuit of knowledge for the purpose of dominating either other people or nature or the body. But he also never tires saying that he wants us to understand Jungian psychology as a science. So another way to refer to this discussion is that it's an attempt to reevaluate what science is, because it is our strongest tool. If you ever traveled in the third world and seen, you know, diseased children and things like that, you realize what it has accomplished. If you've ever been involved in the medical system, you realize it's simply become the way we treat each other as objects. So that is something we'll be seeing. And it's not a resolved issue, I don't think. Now, number two there in the first column, he gets into this business of Christianity lacks madness. It lacks divine life. We'll come again that come back to that again later. I believe what he's driving at there is something he's going to say more directly later, that Christianity came to Germany and destroyed its religion, which was basically an ecstatic religion. Wotan was a warrior, a drunken poet, a seer, and the repression of that aspect of the German personality, Jung felt, was to a large extent the cause of World War I and II. This bland idea of kindness and grace left no room for the wildness of the German character. It was repressed, and then it broke out. And what's ironic here is he's just killed Siegfried. That's what Christianity did. You follow me? But he's going to try to find a different way to deal with it. How do you kill Siegfried but not kill Siegfried? How do you kill Siegfried and still keep all that passion alive?
So how do you kill that attitude?
Right. How do you kill the power attitude without losing the vitality it can contribute to you?
This was above that, but is this where this, in that note, that first note on page 238,
yeah.
He talked about it as a case of destroying the hero ideal of my efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And then right below that, he said, connected with the sacrifice of superior function in order to get at the libido necessary to activate the inferior function. I've
right.
never heard that before.
Oh. Well, yes. That's exactly what's going on.
Is that just what it's called?
The footnote.
Footnote. Yeah.
Might be worthwhile reading that whole section there. Let's see, where should we start?
It starts on the other page.
Yeah. Do we need to go back that far? Might be worth looking at. Footnote 85, bottom of 237. Now, I mentioned to you that 1925 seminar, I think, did I not? He's going to refer to that from time to time. That was much later, but in that 1925 seminar, he reflected back to this period. So, when I came out of the fantasy, I realized that my mechanism had worked wonderfully well, but I was in great confusion as to the meaning of all those things I had seen. The light in the cave and the crystal was, I thought, like the stone of wisdom. Secret murder hero I could not understand at all. Well, because he was still caught in it. The beetle, of course, I knew to be an ancient sun symbol, and the setting sun, the luminous red, disc was archetypal. The serpents, I thought, might have been connected with Egyptian material. I could not then realize that it was also archetypal. I need not seek connections. I was able to link the picture up with the sea of blood I had previously fantasized about. That was that blood flowing over Europe. Though I could not then grasp the significance of the hero killed. Of the hero killed. Soon after, I had a dream in which Siegfried was killed by myself. That's coming up in a couple pages here. It was a case of destroying the hero ideal of my efficiency. This has to be sacrificed in order that a new adaptation can be made. In short, it is connected with the sacrifice of the superior function in order to get the libido necessary to activate the inferior functions. The inferior function would just be another way, the superior function would just be another way of saying what it is in you that adheres to the prevailing scientific and power system. The superior function is usually power-based because it's how you cope. But what he also realizes, okay, if you let that go, you've got to find something else of equal intensity. Otherwise, it's just repression.
So when is this superior function? It's not talking about intuition.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think he's saying here, my thinking function had to be sacrificed. Because it's with thinking that he applied this capacity to put everything in a box, figure it out, perceive it from his point of view, not from its point of view.
So thinking is his superior function?
I think.
Okay.
Thinking or...
Then what would be
intuition?
His superior?
I think probably feeling.
Okay.
Hard to say whether it's thinking or intuition. But certainly sensation and thinking were his weak sides. So it's sensation and feeling for his weak sides.
Okay.
So is it possible to recognize the spirit of the depth when you're in the midst of the spirit of the time?
I don't think so.
Okay. I've been looking at this and thinking a lot about the whole healthcare debate in this country,
mm-hmm.
and how both sides would say that they're dealing with the spirit of the depth, when really I think it's all the spirit of the time. But then what is the spirit of the depth? And I thought, now can I even figure this out, or am I just giving myself a headache for no good reason? So I've kind of stopped thinking about it, but I wonder if there's any hope. I'll keep working, but if not, then I'll just go enjoy my life.
I don't know whether there's any hope or not, but that's not going to stop me. I don't know about the specific arguments, but I think the spirit of the depths, part of the problem, and maybe we should just look at this for a minute, I think the spirit of the depths now is different than the spirit of the depths then. Remember, the spirit of the times then was huge social cohesion of Nazism. We are so fragmented socially. We can't do anything as a group anymore. So I think the spirit of the depths now is about the reestablishment of community. Where the spirit of the depths then was the establishment of the individual. Now, when I say establishing the community, I don't mean another compulsive social organization, but a community of individuals, at least in America. So I think this healthcare thing is, are we going to care for each other or not? That's what's at the bottom of it.
Well, yes, but I think that from all the reading I've done, and I've done extensive reading on both sides of the issue, and from what I've read, there is actually no disagreement that we all need to care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's none. There is huge, divisive, vitriolic difference in how we do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is incredibly divisive.
Mm-hmm.
And the rhetoric that surrounds it is divisive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's really kind of sad because after very careful and thoughtful reading, I haven't heard anybody disagree that we need to take care of each other. But the way to accomplish that is so vastly different that
mm-hmm.
there's not currently any middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems very strange to me, that you both agree that you have the exact same goal
mm-hmm.
and you can't find any common
mm-hmm.
ground in that.
Mm-hmm.
And right now there is none.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to extrapolate from what we're learning here and what he went
yeah.
through to how that fits with today. And, you know, and I don't suppose to be as brilliant as he was, but I am interested in
yeah.
How that affects me. And
I think, well, that's what's going on, and we certainly don't see the way forward.
What I hear you saying is we all have the ideal of caring for one another, and we're stabbing each other to say who's going to decide who gets to be the caring person. So what the two sides have in common is they are approaching the other side in a way that's not caring, which is the ideal they're fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's exactly the same issue as you had with not caring. We
yeah.
have an ideal
yeah.
of having a perfect world, and we're going to get there by killing you.
Right.
What's perfect about that?
Right, and one side is saying, you know, by killing you by taking care of you. And the other side is saying, killing you by not taking care of you, and they're both saying we want to take care of you. Never in my life have I seen something that's quite like this, and it's for me it's very unsettling to have so vastly different views for what everyone agrees is a problem. And it is a difference between community and individual, because one side is saying it really is a community effort to take care of each other, and the other side is saying if you give individuals enough power and control over their own lives, we will automatically take care of each other. And then the other side responds with, but we've tried that and it hasn't worked, and they counteract with, then we don't have enough. And so, and actually, I could sit here and argue either side quite effectively, I think, but...
That's a good summing up.
I'm just trying to figure out what it really means, because I think there's something much deeper going
mm-hmm.
on than this debate about how we pay for our medicine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, are you with me so far? That's the business about divine madness, 238-239. I think the second column, 238, I don't think there's anything particularly new. He's again contrasting the spirit of the depths and the spirit of the times. Then we go to 239. Go ahead.
That one sentence, the spirit of the depths is permanently ice, fire, and death. Isn't that...
Where's that?
It's 238, the next to the last paragraph, the very end of it. That sounds like something we talked about in the living symbol, about how you either have to have the ice or the fire.
I think what he's driving at here is that the spirit of the depths, which he says in that next, is full of horror, is the point. That it wants to create a new world, but when it's unleashed, it actually has the effect of destroying. And I think the practical implication there is, you know, you would look at World War II and say, what a horrible thing. And that horror is the horror of the spirit of the depths. Actually, what the psyche was trying to do was create a new world. But what happened was a world got destroyed. And the collective thinking says, well, look how horrible that was. And creative thinking would say, that's what happens to healing when it's not allowed its place. I think that's what he's driving at there.
But when Hitler first started out, he had all these really good intentions.
Yeah.
And I wondered when I was reading about this divine madness, and we talked about that in Nietzsche.
Yeah.
Whether Hitler didn't fall into the same madness, because
most definitely Hitler was that madness. Yeah. Whether Hitler started out with good intention, or whether he feigned good intention to work his ends, is a big question. But certainly that ecstatic warrior quality of the Germans in the war would be the misguided spirit of the depths. Rather than kill an old value system, it killed people. But its real purpose was to kill an old value system.
So that's what you're saying, the healing would have been, that healing was not given it.
Right, that it was not understood that, yes, a world needs to be destroyed, not people. A way of looking needs to be destroyed. Failing to recognize that a world needs to be destroyed, it destroyed people. We'll see more of that coming up. In fact, I think he's getting into it now. The Von Hero is slain, 239. Black Beetles of Death, we did that. The Son of the Night, that's what I was trying to describe as the understanding provided by the dreams. And as the rising sun of spring quickens, so that's more the same.
Where are you?
239. One, two, fourth line, the blonde hero lay slain. The black beetle is the death that is necessary for renewal. So thereafter, new sun glowed. The sun of the depths, full of riddles, a son of the night. And as the rising sun of spring quickens the dead earth, so the sun of the depths quickened the dead, and thus began the terrible struggle between light and darkness. Out of that burst the powerful and ever vanquished source of blood. This is what was to come, which you now experience in your life, and it is even more than that. I had this vision on the night of 12th December 1913, so before the war started. The war started in 1914, I think August 1914, if I remember correctly. Depths. The surface should mix so that new life can develop. Yet the new life does not develop outside of us, but within us. What happens outside us in these days is the image that the people live and events to bequeath this image immortally to far off times so that they might learn from it, blah, blah, blah. I think the key thing there is inside of us. That the destruction should be a destruction within the individual of false values. Failing that, the society lives it out in the destruction of a scapegoat. But see, he's never criticizing destruction. He's just saying, where does it occur? So, I mean, you might have some people say, oh, look at the war. We must, you know, aggression is such a horrible thing. Look what we do to each other. I mean, he's saying it's not aggression. It's the fact that the aggression was directed toward the wrong object. And the object is a value system that needed to be changed.
That's what I got from the footnote 85 when it was talking about your superior function has to come down so that you can get immortality. That would change for every person. You couldn't put a rule that said thinking needs to increase so that feeling can increase, because for some people, feeling needs to increase so thinking it would depend on the
individual. Absolutely, yeah. But the tyranny of certainty of your main function, that's what's got to get destroyed.
But as a culture, can't we look in our culture here and say that it's feeling that we lack?
I think over culture, you probably
can. Yeah, but then you got Latinos. I don't think you could say they don't lack feeling. With us, I think it's harder. With Germans, they're all thinking types. It's exaggeration, but yeah, I think you can, to some extent, see it in other nations.
But also, like, for Jung, his type and the type of his times were fairly similar. That's why he rose and was very successful. If the type that's dominant in your time is your type, then you tend to be more successful. Whereas if your type is opposite of your time, you tend to have struggled your whole life.
And you think something's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
That you would have a different, your path would be the same.
Yeah, it's the same process of transformation, but what is transformed is different.
So it's part of this, the idea, the thing that we concretize, we try to use material stuff instead of spiritual stuff.
Yeah, right. That we have concretized this process, and that is war. Where war itself isn't bad, because it's meant to be a war inside where you face your opposition. And if you say war is bad and thereby you repress your own war, all you're doing is increasing the possibility that there will be a war. It's this irony that he's trying to work with, I think.
So since the Latinos are the fastest minority, and they have that feeling function.
Yeah.
Is it not kind of working the opposite of what he's talking about, working within and then it happens outside?
Yeah, it might be.
And I don't know, it just occurred to me.
I was going to say that, but I'm trying to keep this manageable. He certainly reevaluated inside and outside by the end of his life.
But also with the Latino population, at least in this country, their greatest desire, more than any other ethnic group, is to assimilate. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the single family homes, huge deal for them. And they are losing some of that feeling when they you know, as they assimilate more and become more like us.
Yeah, about, yeah. I was at, one Saturday night, I ran out of something. I had to run to Target to get something. And I quick got it. And I, oh, I need something else, so I got something else. And I noticed there was this Latino guy all alone walking around Target. And our paths, one of these things that our paths just kind of crossed a couple of times. And he looked, you know, this young guy, about 20. He was not shabbily dressed. He was not well dressed. He was obviously a worker. Looked lonely. Looked kind of sad. And by God, if he didn't get in front of me at the line. And I didn't see what he had in his hand, but he reached in his pocket and he had change, and he counted it like five times. Finally, he realized he had enough. You know what he was buying? A candle. That's feeling. Probably went home that night, and his Saturday night was lighting that candle. That's feeling. That moved me, actually. Okay, how are we doing? Well, we got some time.
First is a beer.
Versus how many people would go out and they'd buy a bottle of beer.
Oh, I see, yeah.
So take themselves out of the feeling.
Yeah.
He was going into the feeling.
And you could have seen the way he was counting, like, this is my Saturday night. I got 95 cents. And what am I going to do with it? You know, counted it again and again. And then, okay, I'm going to buy the candle. Yeah. Okay.
So that next part where he talks about life doesn't come from events down to where he says we make it.
Let's look at that, because yeah. I think he changed his mind about all of that.
Yeah, that's something he definitely evolved in his thinking as he went on.
Yeah.
And it changed.
I think most definitely.
Okay.
Let's just start with this. Life does not come from events, but from us. Clearly, he changed his mind on that. Maybe what he's saying is, though, I mean, I try to put myself in his shoes, that it's not from the events we create, but events that we receive. That's how he might have put it later. Life does not come from events only, but from us, or from events that come to us versus events that I create. See the difference? I think you can say life comes from events when you understand that life comes either inside or outside from the self. I just was watching that, I have a video of Anne France talking about number and time. And she mentioned something I've said, and I was glad to hear her say it. Jung worked on the inner world because that was his chosen domain of research. He knew very well that the psyche was also external, but he only had so many years and he limited himself to that. But certainly, and I think it's, as I've said also, it's the challenge of my and the next generations to show how the outer world is as much the psyche as the inner world. So here, he's just coming upon the idea of the psyche, period, I think. And he ties it to the inner world.
Yeah.
Is it the capacity then to imbue those outer events with meaning? In other words, to make them meaningful?
Well,
to understand what the psyche is teaching, or what the psyche is expressing, or...
I would say to let events reveal their meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and the reason he starts where he starts is to realize life comes from us is to develop a receptive attitude toward what's inside you. And you can apply that receptive attitude to what's outside you as well. That's what I get out of it.
And then he writes here that we create the meaning of events.
Yeah, absolutely changed his mind.
And he changed.
Absolutely. That's, I mean, I don't even, that's not even close to his final position. I would say we discover the meaning of events. But you can see here he's an existentialist. And that very much in the spirit of European philosophy at that time. But certainly he changed his mind on that. Events have no meaning, so what about synchronicity? All of this is very early formulation, it seems to me. So I think all that stuff you can read and realize he expanded it greatly. But that's where he started. And in all of that comes out of the light of the sun. Synchronicity is a concept coming out of the unconscious. Therefore, the last paragraph there on this first column, therefore I take part in that murder, the sun of the depths also shines in me after the murder has been accomplished. That might be a good place to take a break.